Welcome to the Faces of Finance podcast, where our listeners get direct access to Australia's up-and-coming entrepreneurial business leaders sharing their tips and tricks on how they have grown their business. I'm your host, Nick Wormwood, and today we have an exciting guest, Eric Flores, the co-founder of Antojitos Restaurant in Newcastle. Antojitos has a simple philosophy to offer kick-ass Mexican street food prepared fresh. They value great food, they value health, and they value family. And today we are going to do a bit of a deep dive into the business with co-founder Eric. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Nick.
Thanks for taking the time out today.
Of course. Wouldn't miss an opportunity to speak to you.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Absolutely. So, Eric, how about we get started with a little bit of background on yourself, how you got into hospitality, how you got Antojitos started?
Well, look, it was really out of, I think, a necessity in some ways, but, my wife and I moved to Australia. My wife's from here, from Newcastle, and, it was time as we had moved back to get closer to her family. I had to figure out, okay, well, what am I going to do? So anyway, my career path has taken a few changes here and there. Started with some coaching and then got into some real estate, both residential and commercial. I was looking for a bit of a change. And, I'd always thought about getting into hospitality, but I guess, all those different career moves I had made at the time, they never really led that way until more recently. So 46 years old now, and I decided to make a fairly late career change and go for it. I think it was really a joining of the storms, if you will, with wanting to do something independent and working for myself. But also getting into, I think, an industry that suited my personality, wanting to make people happy and do something really interesting and different in the community. So after a couple of years of spending some time here, we decided let's give it a go. And that was really it. Started off with just doing some little markets and things, testing things out. And then it just really grew from there.
Fantastic. And look, I've actually been to the restaurant up in Newcastle. It's a bustling place. It's a pretty big space that you got there, pretty amazing space.
Did you
start off in that building, or is there where did the business, where was the sort of first location of Antojitos?
Well, we started just doing some markets, and then we found our concept to be quite popular. So we decided to go bricks and mortar. And our first one was in a little seaside village, if you will, called Carrington. Little hole in the wall. It was an old butcher shop. And we didn't really know what we were doing at the time. But I drove by this building one day and I saw a for lease by owner sign and decided to give the owner a call. And that was really it. And we just signed up to a 1-year lease, which, now that I look back at it, it was a bit of a risk trying to start a business on a 1-year lease, but lucky for us, it was low risk, I guess. And that 1 year turned into 3 years. So it actually allowed us to go in fairly low risk, but at the same time, give us some time to build our business from there. We've grown into a bigger space, as you can sort of see behind me now. So we're in about 380 square meters now, with a lot more dining and a lot bigger kitchen, and a lot more efficient. So that's where we are today.
And so did you find the clientele that you built in that first small sort of hole in the wall space, did they follow you to this new space? Have you kept those original customers?
Absolutely. Yeah, we've kept most of them, I would think. That the first location we had was a bit of a destination. So it was, you know, it's not an area that you tend to drive through. But, you know, we had developed quite a bit of a following from there. And so after we made our move to our new location here, which is in the CBD of Newcastle, our business just took off even more. So just, I think the accessibility, being closer to the local workforce, and then we happen to be in an old industrial building as well in the middle of the city, which is quite unique. So we've been able to leverage off of all those things and become what we are today.
Fantastic. So you mentioned leasing the property, you know, learning those sort of those early stage mistakes that most people do when they start a business. How are you doing that now with your landlord? Is there a long lease in place? How are you managing that or mitigating that risk of, I guess, being kicked out?
Yeah, good question. Well, look, you know, with our first building, we did lease there. And, you know, lucky for us, I guess, in some ways, I brought that commercial real estate and leasing experience to the table. So, you know, we were able to negotiate a good lease, make sure that we were protected, make sure we had fair rent and good terms. But in that first location, we had outgrown that space, and it was time for us to look for something new. And so when we moved to this new location now, we did start off with a lease. And again, we were able to lease a property with some fairly good terms. And lucky for us, again, whether you want to call it luck or not, I think it was hard work, but we were able to purchase the building we now operate in. So, you know, all that commercial real estate experience came in really handy. We were able to negotiate the purchase of the building. And of course, thanks to yourself as well, we're able to buy. And so we feel really good about the position that we're in now, being able to control our destiny a bit more. The business is paying rent to the owners, which is myself and my sister-in-law. And much more in control of our future.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a super important piece of the puzzle. We deal with a lot of business owners in our day-to-day business, and we see leases are commonly the things that can knock a business about quite heavily, particularly through this kind of crazy COVID situation. So it's quite lucky to, I guess, for you guys to own that property outright.
And hospitality too is, you know, I think a lot of the hospitality businesses out there, especially like franchises and things, they're in high volume locations, which command high rents. So, you know, if you're going into one of the big malls or any of the big retail companies, you know, you're going to be paying a premium. And so, you know, we purchased a building, which made a lot of sense to us because we were able to keep those occupancy costs down even through purchasing. And you know, focus more of our financials to grow in the business.
Yeah. And Eric, how did you guys go through COVID? We had two waves now in Newcastle. There was the first lockdown, then, you know, released and back into it again, dipping in and out. How did the business fare through that? And what did you do to kind of, did you have to make changes?
Look, I mean, it was a difficult time for anyone, especially in the hospitality industry. Look, I guess, you know, starting from the concept that we've got being casual, you know, people can walk in and order at the counter and come and go within 20 minutes, you know. That casual concept allowed us to really adapt very quickly into takeaway trade, which is the only way that we've survived. You know, restaurants were forced to essentially service takeaway orders only. So our concept really lent to going takeaway only. But we did have to adapt in a lot of ways. You know, we the big focus for us was accessibility, making sure that people could get to us. Any way that we can capture that business, we needed to be able to do that. So it was, you know, we thought about everything from how people drove into our restaurant, how they ordered over the phone. You know, we had to get online ordering going, which was a very, very big one. You know, so many people now are ordering off premises. You know, they're not coming into the restaurant to order. They're ordering on their device, whether it's a laptop. Mostly it's 90%. It's by a mobile phone. So we had to get that online ordering going, making sure our website looked good, you know. And then we thought about, you know, once they were here, how do we make it easy, you know? How do they approach the restaurant? What's our signage look like? You know, we implemented a takeaway window from the street so people felt comfortable in this COVID environment to be able to order without feeling like, you know, infection what was an issue. So we made that process very easy as well. So accessibility, that was our motto during COVID. And that really helped us. You know, we were down, but when we look at our figures to date for the year, which we're on track with what we did the previous year. So yeah, wow. We had a great sort of first half of the year. And then those 3 months were a bit of a struggle, but those first 6 months of the year helped prop us up.
Wow. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And if you'd kept, I mean, a lot of those strategies, yeah, buying off premise, are you seeing people still buying off premise? Are they coming in and ordering? How is there a mix of way that people come into a restaurant now?
Yeah. I mean, we've only been open for a week now to dine in, but it's bounced back to pre-COVID levels already for our first week. So we're expecting that takeaway trade to go down. But as a whole, there's no question that there has been a shakeup in the way the hospitality industry, the hospitality and restaurants really are going to be taking orders. So we expect that to stay, you know, for us as a business, we expect that takeaway trade to stay up around, you know, maybe the 25 to 30% mark. Which before was probably only about 10%. So we think it's definitely here to stay.
Wow, it's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's been a few places between the two COVIDs. There was a few restaurants that I've visited down here in Sydney that actually continued to have the online ordering in their restaurant. So rather than someone coming and serving you or taking your order, you would get on your smartphone and scan the table, bring up a menu, pay on your phone, and it would just arrive. That was quite an interesting concept.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I think, you know, it's going to be really important for business owners to, I guess, be really in touch with what their concept is and then adapt to, obviously, what's happening now. You know, you've got survival being an issue during COVID, so I think there's going to be a real push for, you know, employing new technologies and digital is just such a big thing now. But, you know, at the same time, will some of that come back? What is it going to mean for a customer to order face-to-face? You know, are they going to really want that face-to-face interaction? Are they going to want sort of the vibe that people expect when they come into a restaurant? Or is it going to be as simple as, you know, this isn't going to matter anymore, you know? And so, you know, I think there's a real relevance to dine in. People are still going to want that. But of course, you're going to have your ups and downs in terms of trends and what people are expecting. So I think, you know, dine-in's definitely coming back, and it will. It may take some time, and I think people are going to expect that dine-in experience. But at the same time, you know, that takeaway trade, the speed involved with takeaway, and the accuracy and efficiency of it all, it's going to be a real challenge for businesses, I think, to be able to adapt to having both, you know, maximizing what you can do in takeaway, but also maximizing the dining experience.
Yeah. I would assume that takeaway would be more profitable per item sold than in restaurant.
I mean, there's less sort of overheads, I guess, involved with that. But, you know, you got things like packaging that you've got to consider, But yeah, I think, you know, one of the real challenges, I think, again, for the restaurant industry is how, and for us in particular, how do we cope with being able to take on a significant amount of takeaway trade? So you've got orders coming in via delivery platforms such as MenuLog, DoorDash, Uber Eats, things like that. We've got phone orders coming in, and then people walking in as well wanting to order takeaway. So what we're seeing as a trend now is, especially for a lot of the faster sort of food type businesses, is how do they adapt to that extra takeaway trade? How do you supplement your business with that, but also cater to the dine-in? So, you know, a lot of those quick service restaurants, at least what we're seeing in the US, are almost running it as a separate business. So whether you almost run it under the same roof, or, you know, you got these things called ghost kitchens now where people are setting up these kitchens that don't do any dine-in. It's a hole in the wall that no one really knows about, and all you're really there is just to cook food.
Separate kitchen.
Separate. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. So wow. That is something that, you know, we'll look to doing in the future, is almost having a separate kitchen for just takeaway orders only.
Yeah, I guess you can do that. If it's deliveries, you can do that wherever you want.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be in a location where people are walking through. But I mean, one of the beautiful things about Andojitos is the atmosphere in the restaurant. You want to keep that.
Yeah.
Make sure that's promoted up front and personal.
Yeah.
You know, the sights and sounds and the smells, and
that's it. And, you know, that's a point of difference for us, and I don't think that we want to lose that. So, you know, as much as we can grow our takeaway business, we will, while keeping our dine-in in place and making sure we keep that culture there.
Fantastic. And so with respect to the business, you've got competition. What does the competition look like? Do you plan to chase the competition? Are you doing your own thing? What are the growth plans with respect to Andojitos?
You know, like, I think we go through this all the time, and, you know, our philosophy is an evolutionary philosophy. We're always trying to change and improve and get better, but also at the same time sticking to what your core is. And, you know, during our business meetings, in fact, with our managers, it's our discussions can get quite heated because we want the change, but we also want to make sure that we're staying true to who we are. And, you know, we can't ever lose that. And I think we recognize what our points of differences are, but sometimes you forget in making those changes, okay, well, you know, is this getting too far away from what we're about? And we go through this discussion a lot. And so I think in terms of competition, we're probably more focused on staying true to who we are. And, you know, yeah, we recognize what the trends are. So, yeah, we need to be up to date on what's happening in the digital world, you know, making sure that we're being really accessible and we're staying at a reasonable speed and getting food out to customers. And, you know, but, you know, we know we're not going to be, you know, like a Guzman and Gomez. You know, we're not looking for that sort of speed. We're looking for more quality and more authenticity than that. So we know sort of what to grasp onto and what not to grasp onto. You know, we're not going to be overly focused on delivery, and we're not going to be, you know, making sure that we don't lose this vibe here. We want people to stay and sit down. So we want to invest in an interesting building. We want to invest in the people that are working here. You know, we pay our staff a little bit more than what you would probably find at a fast casual restaurant. So finding those right people who can offer us really good customer service. Staying true. Look, competition, knowing your competition is important, but I think it's more important to stay true to who you are and making sure you're relevant to the customer. Yeah,
we see a lot of successful business owners we talk to don't look at their competition with any real detail. They follow their own path. So
that's it.
Interesting.
Yeah,
good to hear. So, is there anything in the industry that you're curious about right now with in hospitality outside of all of the digital changes? Is there anything that you're seeing, like, it's a food supply? How are you managing How are you managing that? Is it coming from different locations? What's...
Yeah, that's definitely one of them. I mean, for this year with COVID and everything, you know, it's something that I think everyone's really had to think about. When we built the business, we really tried to make sure that we were being authentic, but at the same time, you know, we're trying to source as many ingredients as we can that are local. And so, you know, we're not overly reliant on a lot of imported foods. The staples we have to are necessary for our business to run. So, you know, we use authentic chilies and tomatillos and things like that we simply cannot do without, and they're a core to our business. And we tend to bulk order more in those types of for those types of things. So anything that is a core to our business that we cannot operate without and is a potential supply chain issue, we do bulk ordering for those things and make sure that we have that stuff in stock. Everything else is readily available that we can get, you know, any day of the week, essentially. I think, you know, supply chain issues are a big issue. And again, you've mentioned before the whole digital thing. You have to be able to pivot towards takeaway. And I don't know that we've seen the last of any pandemics. So, you know, we've talked about really being able to pivot as quickly as we can if we ever needed to do that in the future. It's a bit of insurance that you need for your business, whether you're in hospitality or not. You know, when this happens again, what are you going to do? You know, are we better this time around than when we were in 2020, you know, or are we sort of just assuming it's never going to happen again? You know, and I think that's a wrong thing to do. You should all really be prepared for these types of things to happen again.
Yeah, it's kept us all on our toes, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
I think it will for a long time going forward. It's so, Eric, we're coming to time. I've got a question that I ask everyone that comes onto the podcast. What would you do if an investor dropped, say, $1 million into the business? How would that get spent, and why would you spend that money?
Yeah. Well, look, we've sort of touched on this already, and I think the technology part is such a big part of I think the hospitality industry right now. So we would really look at making sure that our website is up to date, extremely user-friendly. You know, we would build an app as well that made everything easier for people to order from a mobile phone. You know, we've got a customer experience manager now who her main responsibility is to put herself in the position of the customer and critically analyze every single aspect of the experience. So whether it's ordering on the phone, you know, approaching at the window, how we're ordering, is our point of sale system up to date? What's our customer service like? It's really making sure that we're as accessible as we can. So we would probably invest in an app that allowed us to reach more people. So the technology space we would definitely be investing in. And then, you know, in the hospitality industry right now as well, we're really seeing a tightening of the labor market. I'm not sure, Nick, for you, but it seems across a lot of industries at the current time, especially with COVID and everything, people are struggling to hire. A lot of people moving on, looking for a different opportunity. So we're really looking to probably invest in some sort of training program for our staff, which would mean employing some technology or apps that allowed us to train new people, bring them on board more quickly, make sure that they're bringing more skills along as they spend more time here. And I think that will help us retain people over time. So I think the HR component of what we're actually doing, we would definitely invest in some money into that. And we're going to be opening our second restaurant as well. And then maybe a third. You know, we would use that money to open up another location and, you know, bring all that new technology and resources and everything along and make sure that we were that much further ahead than where this store opened, 4 years ago. So, yeah.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Awesome. So, exciting times ahead.
Yeah. We're kind of slow to the start, but we've approached it where we just want to make sure that we're doing the right thing and we're not moving too quickly. So, but yeah, I think there's definitely some big growth ready for us in the future.
Fantastic. Eric, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure as always. And and thanks for taking the time out of your day. I know you're definitely a busy man. That's it for us today, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to the podcast. If you've enjoyed the content, please subscribe. We have plenty more to come. And as always, have an awesome day.